This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and joining me in the studio is Philip C. And it has just gone past 6 a.m. and I also take the opportunity to wish everyone a Gong Hei Fa Choy.
Wow, so auspicious.
Must la, even though it's the fourth day of the Chinese New Year. Now, we normally don't like fourth. It's true, it's not auspicious, but it's still Chinese New Year. And yes, we are celebrating in the new normal, but I am still dressed in a cheongsam kind of outfit just to get myself going into the spirit of things.
I walked into the studio at 5:20 and there she was in this red hot cheongsam.
Must la, get into the mood.
Like, what is this?
This is Chinese New Year, Philip. Get with the plot.
And I'm in a black shirt with a white khaki pants.
You sui sui la. You please, everybody, even though you're at home, I think we can kind of get into the spirit of things. But aside from Chinese New Year, actually, on the 13th of February was World Radio Day, which was held over the past weekend. It was actually quite a busy weekend because on the 14th, of course, was Valentine's Day. So yes. Lots of events.
Did you get roses?
Of course not. Of course.
What?
No la. Who sends
from your love of your life? You didn't get anything?
Love of life can be a cheap love of the life, but never mind. But in terms of World Radio Day, to mark the occasion, we're discussing how radio broadcasters are navigating this pandemic and the decline of traditional media with our one and only Meera Sivasodhi, who is the general manager of BFM. That's happening at 8:45 a.m. And at 9:30, we have Pressing Matters, where Shazana Mokhtar speaks to radio journalist Manuela Saragossa of the BBC World Service. Of course, she's the host of the Business Daily, which we air every week.
Fascinating. I'm very interested with the interview with Meera because I've been in radio for 20 days and I think she's been around for 20 years, right?
She's been around quite a long time. I think almost as long as BFM has been around, which is 13 years, if I'm not wrong.
Mm.
So I think it'll be an interesting conversation, especially with the pandemic, right?
Yes.
I think globally, all media companies are trying to adjust. But what do we have shortly after this?
Well, we have one short talk about how to be funny at work and whether humor is now the new management superpower.
Everybody needs some humor.
Some lightness, some levity.
Some lightness and even humor. And after this, after the song, we're going to come back in and we're going to talk about humor even when you protest, if that's possible. As always, get in touch with us via WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in a few minutes, but first here's Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and joining me on The Morning Run, of course, is Philip C. And the next article is rather interesting. It's from the MSN.com website. And it's entitled, Myanmar's Generation Z Protesters Defy Powerful Military with Innovative Signs. And it's less of a story, but more of a picture kind of thing, isn't it?
That's right.
Pictures say a thousand words, and these say quite a lot, actually.
Correct. I mean, fascinating. If you see all the pictures, if you're scrolling across, the placards, the demonstrations are in English.
Yes.
They're diverse. They come from all sorts of visuals and really hilarious messages. A lot of expletives, I must say. So we're going to bleep that out in
toot,
the coming.
Toot.
Toot, 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 right?
Yeah.
And they really are so different from the past demonstrations. In the past, there were the monks doing it, called the Saffron Revolution. But here, the approach and feel looks very different, like a party, you know?
Almost, yeah. Apparently, according to this article, there's a steady stream of characters from punk rockers to Harry Potter fans and beauty queens, unicorns to superheroes. All of them have marched the streets in Myanmar with cheeky placards featuring some choice words for the junta and its arrest of the country's de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi. I guess it's where people just express themselves in 1,001 ways.
Yeah, because we talked about this where in the past there were unifying themes or messages, right? Even in Malaysia, Bursay was a very clear theme. Hong Kong, you had the umbrella protests. Thailand, you have red shirts, yellow shirts. But in Myanmar, there isn't that unifying message or theme yet. They tried
yet
to do it.
I like the yet point, Philip. Yet.
Yet. Yeah.
I think maybe because it's evolving organically. You know, it's not like it kind of happened quite suddenly, right? The Myanmar, the military taking over. And then for them, when you think about it, they are a country that is, I would have to say, these young people are rather brave, because it's a country not known for its democratic institutions, not known for, I would say, freedom to protest.
Yes.
And they have been in one form of military dictatorship or another for the last 50 years. And even under Aung San Suu Kyi, it wasn't a free democracy completely, like, you know, what we are used to, or what in our mind, what a democracy is all about. And despite all this, young people have come out to protest and say, look, we're not happy with the situation. So maybe it will evolve to something more coherent.
Hopefully.
Yeah, and something very like thematic, like what we see around the world.
Yeah, so in the end, you get dispersed, these different messages. So one classic one was, a visual was a young girl in unicorn pajamas holding a placard saying, I should be at home watching Netflix and sleeping, not protesting, right? There's another one which is inspired by Netflix from the group Money Heist. We only rob banks, you rob the whole nation. The best one, I think, was, of course, expletive please, no dictatorship, I can't even get into a relationship.
Actually, some of them are very, very
hilarious,
cute.
Yes.
Maybe they reflect what people really think, right? I mean, these are their raw emotions, right? In the sense that, look, all this is going on, right? And then what about my real life? I can't get on with my real life.
That's right.
There are bigger issues now that have overtaken. I mean, the country is in chaos. Do we have democracy? What happened to our leader? What I really like about this is the fact that it seems to be, this protest seems to be very young people driven. And we are increasingly seeing this around the world. I think the people that are really disenfranchised by COVID-19, by the inequality that's going around, that's probably increasing around the world, are the young. And so they are coming out onto the streets and saying, look, we're not happy with the situation. But I guess at the end of the day, is anybody going to pay attention to them? These signs are funny, but is it really going to get any traction? That worries me a little bit.
That
you
is the very tough question, because the signs are all in English. Predominantly. So who is the audience when they do these demonstrations? It is essentially Western democracies, the Western media. But really, is that the target that you try to push for?
Even if they need to make signs in Chinese.
They should. And they try to do that. They try to have a steamboat in front of the Chinese embassy.
Oh, they're in a steamboat.
And wear Chinese New Year costumes. But I don't think that works.
Okay.
And doesn't hit that audience very hard.
Well, the Chinese basically have come out with a statement asking everybody to talk nicely to each other, and then, you know, they would just wash their hands off the issue, which is very typically Chinese. But I think the point is, for them, maybe these young people, at the end of the day, what they want is just some media attraction, right? Mm. A media attention. As long as their story is kept in the mainstream papers, maybe there'll be some pressure from the international community as to regards to the safety of Aung San Suu Kyi, the restoration of democracy. I mean, even in Malaysia, when I try and draw parallels to what we experienced, like we had many rounds of birthday and we had some really funny signs too. A lot of funny signs. And then I remember seeing, because yellow was the color, we also had costumes. There were a few Bruce Lees in that yellow kung fu
of
outfit.
Yes. Yes.
And then we had the yellow Spider-Mans. So I think it's just an expression of how you feel about the situation. And even though it's a very serious situation, humor is something you need all
Absolutely.
The time. Absolutely. But do let us know what you think, as usual. Up next, we'll have some messages. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was It Runs Through Me by Tom Misch.
Great song.
I know, it's a favorite of our producer, Diana, here. She said it's quite sadly though, Valentine's gift to herself.
Cannot lah. How can it be the only Valentine's gift she gets?
Exactly, a song for herself. Okay, later on, maybe we sing something for
her.
But in the meantime, we've got this rather interesting article in front of us. Actually, two articles. One is from the Harvard Business Review, because Philip, you're very atas, right?
Yeah, of course.
And the other one is from Forbes, also quite atas, but both on a similar topic. And the Harvard Business Review is entitled How to Be Funny at Work, while the Forbes article is The New Management Superpower is Humor. Seriously? And they're both somewhat related, right?
Yes, yes. Well, Shaoning was giving me the side eye, and I want to just have the caveat that we are not looking to hire clowns. For sure. We are just talking.
I'm sure some people think we are, but never mind, moving on.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. I think it's about adding levity and lightness in our day-to-day work. Because if work really consumes us so much and takes up nearly 70-80% of our waking time, it really is important to have that lightness and a bit of fun sometimes in our work.
I tell you, if anything helped us through this COVID-19 pandemic, which honestly is probably a year, right? Because I think it's a year, coming to a year. March 18 would make it one full year of various forms of MCO. If anything has helped me, I don't know about you, Philip, help me to survive this, keep myself going, keep myself motivated, is humor. And I try to find humor in everything, no matter how dire a situation is. And this applies in life and also in work.
I agree with you. So for me, besides exercising gratitude, humor was a crucial part to keep me sane. And even during lunches and meals, I would watch a sitcom simply because I just needed a laugh.
Yeah, it's like a form of escapism, right? I mean, absolutely. It reminds yourself that, hey, there are still good things in life, things to laugh about and to joke about. But apparently when it comes to business, it does make a difference.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. And I think it's because when you laugh, for me, is that you show a side of your personality that maybe you don't reveal normally.
Mm.
And then once, you know, someone laughs at you or with you, there is that human connection made. Tick. Right, you tick that box. You have something in common.
Yeah,
and you break that ice. So I think it works even in business, and it works very well in offices, I find.
So they have research to back this up, and this comes from the book Humor Seriously, both by Jennifer Aker and Naomi Bagdonas, both Stanford Business School professors, and they cite research to say that sense of humor. If you're a manager with a sense of humor, your subordinates would rate you 23% more in terms of being respected, 25% more pleasant to work, and 17% friendlier. Now, what's even more interesting is on the negotiation or sales side. Now, they did a study where if you negotiated over the price of an artwork, it found that buyers were willing to pay on average 18% more when the sellers showed a sense of humor.
Ah, so humor does pay. I think the other thing that humor helps is when there is dispute resolution. Okay, so let's say there's any conflict. And I remember this very classic moment with Kusu Chuang, the other presenter on BFM, right? Which you can hear tomorrow, actually, by the way. And he and I had this disagreement about, I think, content over one of our shows. And we went on and on and on and on and on. And then, you know, it was like back and forth. And we were both quite feisty characters. So we just laid it on each other,
right? Yes, I was there, I think.
And then towards the end, right, I literally threw down my headphones. Pop! And I went, Chuang. Why? You say I'm fat. Then we just cracked up, you know, because sometimes you just need someone to break the ice, right? And just say something ridiculous that doesn't even make any sense, isn't even related to the argument. And then we both cracked up and that was the end of the argument.
A good point where humor is such a valuable, a diffusive tool to break tension. And that's quite at a heightened level now during COVID. I reflect back and I find when I've done workshops or when I participate in workshops, the best is when icebreakers also have an element of humor. And sometimes people are worried about exercising humor because they feel that it's inappropriate or the timing is off. So doing it at the start or at the end of a conversation is very useful, or finding the right time when you want to inject in is also critical to make the conversation worthwhile and richer and deeper, I feel.
Yeah, but timing does play a role. Sometimes it doesn't work, sometimes it works. But this Harvard Business Review, I find, I never realized this. Apparently, there are four types of humor styles.
Yes.
So there is stand-up, where you're bold and irreverent and unafraid to ruffle a few feathers. Then there's sweetheart, which is earnest, understated, and use humor that lightens the mood. Sniper, I guess like the gun, you know, a bit edgy, sarcastic, and nuanced.
Dark.
And then magnet, which is expressive, charismatic, and easy to make laugh. I think all of us, if you ask me,
have got a bit of everything.
Yeah, got a bit of everything. And then maybe for some people, more than others. And I think you have to choose the type of humor depending on the situation.
Yes. And also, I think there's a lot of pressure for people to be funny now. So don't. And just be yourself.
Sometimes the humor is in the most mundane and ordinary things in life, right? You don't have to really go all out there. And I think the most important thing about humor is the ability to laugh at yourself.
Yeah.
Because if you don't know how to laugh at yourself, it won't be funny, right? Because you should always take yourself not so seriously.
Well, self-deprecating humor is super critical and helpful, and because it's inoffensive also, because you're making fun of yourself. And they recall this story where this chief executive was trying to give a speech, and he was trying to crack his head about humor, and he realized everybody in the company is listening, and I'm the chief executive officer, but at home, no one listening to me, and I'm the assistant to my 11-year-old kid. And that by itself, applying your life, has a lot of levity and laughter as well to it.
Yes,
and
it's true.
And it's very simple stories like that.
You make yourself human, right? So let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Let us know how humor has helped you in the workplace. What kind of jokes do you crack? But up next, we have the news bulletin, and to take us there is Moondance by Van Morrison. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good morning. This is Xiaoning, and I'm here with Philip on The Morning Run. And that song was The Lost Art of Keeping a Secret by Queens of the Stone Age. Wow, that's a mouthful of a title of a song.
Profound.
And by the way, it's just gone past 6:38 in the morning. It's Monday, the 15th of February. And as usual, we are looking at the international headlines that, which are important. And how can we forget Mr. Ex-President Donald Trump, because...
Donald J. Trump.
Because he was acquitted by the Senate of inciting an insurrection in his impeachment trial yesterday. The Senate voted 57-43 on the question of whether Trump was guilty of inciting an insurrection. Only 7 Republicans joined the Democrats in voting to convict a president, and that was not enough to cross the 2/3 majority threshold needed to convict him.
Right. The Senate vote showed that Trump continues to hold a tight grip over the Republican Party. The former president has largely retained the loyalty of GOP lawmakers, despite losing the election and repeating the falsehood that ballots were rigged. However, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, a former Trump loyalist, the word former, heavily criticized Trump for his actions, even though he voted against the conviction. So McConnell said, "There is no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. No question about it."
But yet he didn't vote.
He didn't vote. I must say, though, 57 is a good vote because it is the most bipartisan vote.
Yes, ever. The Republicans. Ever, right?
Yeah.
But we'll be discussing the outcome of the impeachment trial and what this means for Trump, the Republican Party, and the U.S. under the Biden administration later at 7:30 a.m. So do tune in. But let's have a look at another country, one of my favorites, which unfortunately...
The boot of Europe.
I know, we can't go to now because of COVID-19. And Italy, the former European Central Bank chief, Mario Draghi, was sworn in as the Prime Minister of Italy over the weekend, leading a unity government. Now, President Sergio Mattarella asked him to take over the previous coalition amidst party infighting. Draghi's government is the 67th, to take office since 1946 and the 7th in the last decade alone. I think they beat Australia in terms of new PMs.
It's so much infighting in Italy. It's incredible. And I was just looking at an interesting data point where they looked at the last 10 PMs and 4 of the 10 were technocrats. They were not politicians.
But they didn't survive either.
And they didn't survive either. Because we always have this conversation that technocrats are the ones that are going to take us out of this debacle or misery. And it's the politicians that are causing all the problems. But actually, if you look at Italy, that isn't really the case.
I don't know whether it's just a problem that Italy faces because Italy itself, some would say almost the sick man of Europe, right? I mean, if you look at the last 40 years in terms of economic growth, GDP is less than 1% on average.
Yeah.
So even currently, Draghi is going to face a monumental task ahead of him. They've got 2 major issues, one of which is the coronavirus crisis and the economic slump. Now, if we rewind back to the early days of COVID-19, they were one country which really had severe infections and also very, very high death rates. So currently, they are in the worst downturn since World War II. overall GDP has shrunk by 8.8% in 2020. Hundreds of people are still dying of COVID-19 each day, and the vaccination campaign is going very slowly. So his immediate priority will be planning how to spend more than the 200 billion euros, or about $240 billion, in EU funds allocated to Italy for economic recovery.
Well, if he prevails, Super Mario will likely bolster the entire Eurozone, which has long fretted over Italy's perennial problems. Success would also prove to Italy's skeptical northern allies that by offering funds to the poorer south, they will fortify the entire bloc. This is interesting because if you look at the north-south divide, even Italy has that same problem. If you look at the northern side of Italy, where Milan is, it's super wealthy, affluent, but if you go further south...
Industrial powerhouse of Italy, right?
Exactly, but if you go further south into Sicily, Naples, that's where the poor and the inequality becomes very evident.
Yeah, so he has quite a tough task ahead of him. Now, Italy also is due to return to the polls in 2 years' time, but it's far from certain that Draghi will be able to survive that long. His unity government includes parties with radically opposing views on issues such as immigration, justice, infrastructure development, and welfare. He's also unveiled his 23-strong cabinet on Friday, which includes 8 women. 8 of those ministries went to technocrats. So I don't know whether whether he can survive is the big question.
Yeah, but Super Mario has pulled a lot. I mean, in ECB, he really got the Eurozone out of that 2008 crisis.
Well, maybe it's true because, you know, when you think about it, when you're heading any Euro organization, you're having to deal with 27 member countries, right?
Yep.
All with very differing views, and you manage to steer that ship. So maybe for a change, somebody in Italy might be able to do that. It might be possible. But let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio on any of the stories we've covered. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. We'll be back after these messages. Don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. I'm Wong Shaning with Philip C. And this is The Morning Run. And that was Fool's Gold by the Stone Roses. And it's currently 6:50 in the morning. It's a Monday, the 15th of February. And as usual, we're taking a look at some of the local stories this morning. And in front of me is The Vibes. We should actually refer to this a bit more. And it's entitled Netizens Rap Rina for Silence on Alleged Sexual Harassment at Police Roadblocks. Because this was really in Twitter over the weekend. And I think netizens are saying that so far our Woman, Family, Community Development Minister, Dato' Sri Rina Mohammed Harun, has drawn flak for her silence on this issue.
I think she's got quite a lot of publicity recently with her recent makeovers, and also she was giving this very long speech at the United Nations on Friday, which I think got quite a lot of attention as well.
But I guess the point is some people say she's silent on the issues which affect a lot
wrong things.
Affect Malaysian women. But other news, I think, of course, which is grabbing headlines is the vaccination story, right? Mm. Because if I'm not wrong, on Tuesday at 9:30, our Prime Minister will be rolling out the details of the vaccination plan for the country. But in the meantime, our Musti Minister, Science, Technology and Innovation Minister, Kari Jamaluddin, has been quite vocal, I think, on social media and even in the newspapers,
right,
to talk about vaccines and, I think, overcoming some of the vaccine hesitancy. So I refer to the Singapore Straits Times. You know, I love to read that paper. And it says that it will start at the end of the month in order to help the economy recover. And he basically says that Malaysians should not listen to the myriad of conspiracy theories that are out there with regard to the vaccinations.
That's right. Talking about conspiracy theories, if you go to the Malaysian Reserve, the title is this: COVID-19 vaccine safe, do not contain microchips. Because the vaccines procured by Malaysia are safe, they do not contain microchips that will control people's minds.
Yeah, he also rubbish claims that the vaccine is part of an Illuminati agenda to establish a new world order. The vaccine is produced by science. He says, and this is in the Straits Times, Singapore Straits Times, we must be confident in science and not take conspiracy theories in family WhatsApp groups or housing communities citing fake sources. Science must win. And KJ, if you're hearing this, Kyrie, you are more than welcome to come on the Morning Run for a Breakfast Grill or whatever program.
We reserved a nice seat for you.
To tell the public this, right? Because there is a lot of vaccine hesitancy. So people really want to know how the program is going to be rolled out. Who are the priorities? I think we hear some numbers, as many as, 100,000 injections in a day. You know, is it going to be the frontliners? Is it follow going to be the school teachers? Who's going to get it? I think all these questions are up there and we would really like to find out too.
Yeah, I think there's so much detailing. The sequencing of how you distribute the trial run are going to be very important questions everyone's to know. What's the process? I think last week you highlighted there were 5 channels for you to apply.
Apparently, you also cannot pick the vaccine.
Oh, really?
Yes, that's not it. You're just going to get what you're going to get, whatever is approved at this moment.
Yeah.
So it's not like you can elect, I want this or that.
But there are 5 channels to register.
Yeah. So as usual, the invitation is an open one. We would like to hear from you. I think the listening audience of BFM would also like to know. Meanwhile, I'm turning out my attention to the Edge Weekly. And it's related to the signs of COVID-19. In the column, Frankly Speaking, which is my favorite, I always turn to it straight away. And the Edge is asking, where is the scientific justification for the government's decision to quarantine ministers for a mere 3 days?
I find that interesting because on the same back, if you look at the reserve again, New Zealand has put Auckland in a 3-day lockdown.
Yeah, after just finding,
two or three cases. So I'm quite keen to understand what is the science of that 3-day lockdown, whether there's any difference, because we've always been talking about 14 days and then cut to 10 days. But you're hearing this 3-day lockdowns proliferating now, but what's the difference?
What's quite interesting about New Zealand's position is how fast they reacted.
Correct.
So the minute they found these two cases, where they cannot identify how these people got it, they quickly swung into action. And I think they're not the only ones because the state of Victoria in Australia is also in a similar mode, right? So I think what they're trying to do is like trying to control it or contain it and then probably do a lot of contact tracing with regards to it and who's been affected. As usual, the pandemic is something that all of us, is new to us, right? And I think there'll be different models in terms of how we can flatten the curve.
Yeah. It's interesting because this woman that was presumably with COVID actually worked for an airline catering company.
Ah, so how did she get it?
Yeah.
But a little bit of optimism, but does that I would like to highlight that's in the New Straits Times is the number of cases. So far, the cases now are 2,464 cases, the lowest since January 11, and the highest daily recoveries ever recorded, indicating maybe the fight against COVID-19 is beginning to bear fruit. But I wonder that's also due to the fact that it's Chinese New Year, so maybe there's less testing going on.
Yeah.
I think the R0 number is slightly increased yesterday. That was on the back of our DG. So the point is we still need to keep those SOPs going. And, you know, it's still this war against COVID-19. But that's all from the local papers this morning. Coming up next is the 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we'll be speaking to Kingsley Jones of Jevons Global to find out where global markets are heading. But first here, It's Going to Happen by The Undertones. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.